This is Nursing in America. Each week, we speak with incredible nurses from all over the world who have taken the leap to start a new life in the United States. If you're thinking about doing the same, then this is the place you'll find all the insider knowledge and inspirational success stories to realize your own American dream.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to AMN Healthcare International's live show, Onwards and Upwards, where we discuss everything a global healthcare worker needs to know about living and working in the United States. I am your host, Danielle Friedman, and today we are going to be doing our once-a-month immigration Q&A with our legal experts. So let's bring up our map of the United States so you can see. We have opportunities that are consistently changing. So at different times, we have different opportunities. So please feel free to log on to our website and submit your application. That's amnhealthcare.com/international. And our recruiters are on hand, ready and waiting to help you reach your American dream. I also just want to remind everybody, today we are going to be discussing the September bulletin, but next month we are going to be discussing the October visa bulletin. So that is when the year resets. So we are going to go live the day after the bulletin is released so we can bring you the latest news, the updates, and we can all debrief together with our legal experts. So please join us 1 month from sometime from now, whenever the visa bulletin is released, and we will discuss when the new year resets. So without further ado, let's bring out our expert immigration attorneys. Good morning, Mike and
Andrew. Hi, Danielle.
How are you, Mike?
I'm doing okay. Chris looks like a... Oh, there you go. There you go.
He looked a little Grim Reaper-ish, but now he looks much more vibrant.
Yeah, we thought it was a Halloween theme thing. I mean, we were early.
I do love Halloween.
I do.
All right. Well, it's great to see you both this morning. Thanks for coming on, as always. Let's take a quick moment and do a little bit of introductions. Mike, you want to go first?
Sure. My name is Mike Kamen. I'm an immigration attorney based in Cincinnati, Ohio. I've been doing immigration law for a little over 30 years and healthcare work for about 25.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we're excited to have you take some questions. I see the chat is already going off. Reminder, if you have any questions for Mike and Chris, please put them in the chat. All right, Chris, please introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hey, this is Chris Musillo. I'm an immigration attorney. I've been working in this area since the late 1990s and look forward to our monthly talks.
Awesome. Very seasoned expert attorneys. We're very thankful to have your guidance as we go through our questions and discuss what happened for the September visa bulletin. Let's take a look at the chats. Looks like we have Savella saying hi from Dubai, Caroline saying hi from Kenya, Harriet saying hi from Zambia. We got people coming from all over the world. Thank you all for joining us. So Mike, can you take a moment and just explain what happened for the September visa bulletin that was just released?
Sure. The one word answer is nothing. Everything stayed the same for the September visa bulletin. So we see the final action date charts look exactly like they did for us in August. Frankly, I was a little surprised. I thought there might be some either retrogression or possibly even some U, which stands for unavailable. However, there was an announcement made. It's always important. Not every visa bulletin has it, but a lot of visa bulletins have some commentary on usually the last page. And there's commentary on the September bulletin that talks about the availability of employment-based visas, that they expect that they're going to run out of visas at some point, possibly this month, but at sometime in September. And if so, they won't issue a new visa bulletin, but as a practical matter, they will stop issuing immigrant visas. So,
okay, so what I think you're saying is that there was a note that makes you think that there might be a U, which means unavailable, at some time between now and the release of the next visa bulletin. Is that right?
That's correct. And I don't know. Chris may know whether or not they ever they have a live one where they might actually physically update it where we would see you. No, they do. I don't think so, but I don't know.
So then how would you know if it's unavailable if they don't update it?
A lot of times if you're here in the U.S. and you've gone to a 485-day interview, you will be told at the interview that your case is fine, you're approvable. However, we've been told that we are out of visas for the year. Even approval in October after the new allotment. If you are the consulate, a lot of consulates will continue with interviews. However, will not issue visas until after. I could see certain consulates deciding to cancel interviews and reschedule them as well. If you're here in the U.S. and you've not been scheduled for an interview and you have a 45 pending, they have a message that if you request a status update, that they will indicate that your case has been halted because of the lack of visa number. So there are several ways you'll find out.
Okay.
It's a short period of time. I mean, we're already near the end of August already, or we're in the middle of August, so we've got 6 weeks left. So.
Interesting. Okay. So, Chris, I want to ask you, in the past couple of months that we have been meeting, we thought that the summer may go unavailable sooner, and it hasn't. Is it a good sign that we didn't come out with the September visa bulletin as unavailable? It might become unavailable, but that's what we said last. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I would classify it as a good sign or a bad sign for that matter. I would just, you know, the date is the date. My guess is most people who have their visa priority date before their Philippines, February 2023, February 8th, if their other countries April 1st, 2023, they've probably gone through the process already. My guess is there's just a few stragglers in there. Maybe you're at an embassy that's particularly backed up, and yet your priority date is before that date. But so I take the fact that it hasn't been officially declared as unavailability as just probably a technicality. It's not like anyone in the last 30 days has become current, right? So I wouldn't overread too much into the visa bulletin. I also wouldn't overread too much into the fact that it hasn't technically been listed as unavailable. As Mike said, there's a note in the visa bulletin. That note even implies that it might become unavailable sometime in August before we even reach September. So that tells me that the State Department is anticipating that it will become unavailable, and that my guess is will likely happen at the end of August, if not early September. You know, as Mike said, you know, I don't think that sometimes they will issue what we call a mid-month visa bulletin. They could do that. They could even just issue a press release and just simply let everybody know. So I don't think they're going to keep it as a secret from anybody. How they formally do that process, there's nothing in the law that says how they have to do it. So, but I suspect we will all know in the next few weeks that the final visa number has been used.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you for the insight, talking about how we think the next month is going to play out. I see we got lots of questions asking for predictions for the October visa bulletin. Of course, we are not working at the State Department. We're not working at the State Department, so we don't set the dates. But I'm curious to hear both of your thoughts for what's going to happen next month for the October visa bulletin. Mike, you want to go first?
Oh, sure. I love going first on prediction for work. Basically, throwing something on a wall and hope it sticks. So, you know, one of the things that we historically looked at is the date for filing chart, which tends to be kind of a leading indicator. And this year it indicated that it would get all the way to May 1st, 2023. We fell short of that, and with April for other rest of the world, but all the way back in February for the Philippines. So gives me some pause, some concern that we may not get a big jump in October. We also did not see summer retrogression. We didn't see it significantly fall back this summer as we have in some other summers. If we look over, say, the last, you know, 20 years where retrogression has been an occurrence. So sometimes we were hoping that we would just get through back to where we were and maybe a little bit forward. Here we've been kind of stagnant for a while. So I do expect to see some forward movement, but I do not expect to see like a 6-month jump or anything crazy like that. Frankly, I'd be very happy if we, you know, jump forward, you know, a month, 2 months kind of time frame.
Okay, so hopefully slow and steady movement is what might sounds like.
Sure, Chris? We'll go with that.
Chris, what do you think?
I'm with Mike. I think anyone who's expecting, you know, and the two ones that I'll focus on and really the rest of the afternoon or morning, I'm sure Mike will as well. Really, the two dates that encompass the most people here are not the Indian and Chinese nurses, or of course the EB3s, but the all other in the Philippines. So today we've got the all other at April 1st, 23, and the Phil's is Feb 8th, 2023. I guess is I'd probably be a little surprised if those dates move beyond the month that they're currently in. So my guess is the Philippines will probably be some February 2023. Could it go into March 2023? I guess, maybe. And likewise for the all other, it's April 2023. Could that get into May 2023? I think that's possible. But I think anyone who's expecting, you know, if you have a priority date of 2024 or even, you know, in the second half of 2023, I wouldn't spend too much time refreshing the Visa Bulletin page. I think you'll end up being disappointed. But I want to double click on something that Mike said that I think is probably even more important. Unless you have a Visa priority date in February, March, April, May, those kind of 4 months that we've talked about of 2023. The one that I think will be interesting is to see what the dates of filing number is, because that is, as Mike alluded to, it's the target date in October where the U.S. government believes the Visa Bulletin will be in 12 months' time. And so, you know, they did, I think, a pretty good job, if you think about it, in October. They told us that the dates of filing was going to be March of 2023. And, you know, here we are 12 months later. Again, this is the date that the government put out last October. So, you know, nearly 12 months ago, the dates of filing date they put out in that Visa Bulletin was March 1st, 2023. And, you know, from my chair, they got that pretty accurate. I mean, the Philippines one was February 8th, 2023. They were predicting March 1st, 2023. It's a pretty good prediction from my eyes. On the all other, they predicted March 2023. We're here at April 1st, 2023. And so in some ways, that March 1st was actually kind of the midpoint between the Phil's and the all other. So, you know, I think that's the, you know, we do this every month. Everybody wants to know, what do you think next month? What do you think the next month is? Well, I'm going to suggest to you that when the Visa Bulletin comes out in October, you look at the dates of filing, that's going to be a pretty good guess as to where we're going to be 12 months from now. And then you can just sort of draw a line between those. So for instance, if the dates of filing comes out for the Phil's EB3, at June 15th, 2023, I think you can expect that over the course of the next 12 months, we're going to go from today's date of February 8th to June 15th under my example. And that's going to be the entirety of the movement over the fiscal year. I'm not predicting that's what it's going to be, by the way, but that's what it might be. And likewise for the all other, if the all other date is, I don't know, November 1st, 2023, then I think we're going to move from April 1st, 2023 more or less till November 1st. Might it only be October 1st? Might it be December 1st? Sure. But I think that'll give you a sense as to what you can anticipate for the movement over the next 12 months with, you know, keeping in mind any 1 month, it could move up a little faster or slower than we all anticipate, but it's going to move fairly in a fairly steady rate.
We'll be back with the conversation in just a second. There's a wonderful opportunity for you. AMN Healthcare Network is currently recruiting registered nurses around the world to live and work in the United States. To learn more and apply, go to amnhealthcare.com/international. That's amnhealthcare.com/international. On with the show.
Okay, so I think we will all be curious to look not just what happens with the final action dates, but also the dates for filing chart, right? For next visa bulletin. Okay. Well, thank you both for sharing your thoughts. Very interesting. I know we are all anxiously awaiting the new resets in the new year, so we will see what happens probably about a month from now. Okay, so let's get into some of these questions. We have got lots of people sending questions, so we're going to try to get to as many as we can. Hello to Fadzi from Zimbabwe. I saw we have Gladys from the Philippines. Thank you for joining us. So Dan from Kenya says, when does one get scheduled for an interview at the local embassy? Is it when one is current and is documentarily complete or current alone? Mike, can you take this one?
Sure. So you need to be both current and DQ, so documentarily qualified or documentarily complete to get an interview. So you need both of those. Current alone is not sufficient. Just like being DQ'd alone is not sufficient. You need both of those.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Mike. So I think this is actually a good time for us to bring up one of our graphics that shows the 5 steps to the consular green card. We can really show this in a picture for Daniel. So these are the 5 steps. Of course, there are many little steps underneath, but these are the 5 steps that we have really distilled down for how to get to the United States. So step 1 is your pre-filing. This is everything that you have to do on your end to get ready to get filed. So that means taking your NCLEX, getting a job offer, making sure that you have everything you need in order to get filed. Step 2, which is when you move to filing of the immigrant petition. Once your petition, your I-140 is filed, that's when you get your priority date. That's when you get your place in line. You'll hear us say many times on this show, get your place in line, get the process started. That's really that step right there. Once you get to step 2, you move on to step 3, which is the National Visa Center. I like to think of this as the secretary, the organizer that's going to go through all of your documents, make sure that everything is complete. This is where you will be parked if you are not current, but you are documentarily complete. And then once you do become current and you are documentarily complete, you will move to step 4, which is where you will have your consulate interview. And hopefully step 5, which is where you will come to America. And as you can see on this graphic, steps 4 and 5 is where we have retrogression. Retrogression is where we have a higher demand for visas than there is a supply. So that's why steps 4 and 5, you'll be parked there. So hopefully that answers your question, Daniel. Thank you for the good question. So let's see. We got lots of questions. We have one from Harry that came in. Harry said, can you speak about the banned country? Will there potentially be any changes? Chris, can you maybe take this one?
I think we all know what we know, which is to say what the press release and the policy the government is currently using. There are some exceptions. So if you are on a banned country, I do think you want to talk to your immigration attorney to see what rules apply to you, to see if an exemption applies. There's also, you know, some shortcuts in some of those. There's also some visa categories that are banned in some countries, but other visa categories that are not banned in other countries. So I think the number one, the most important takeaway is if you are from a banned country, that you make sure to talk to a professional about what your options are. In terms of where that list may go, will it grow? Will it shrink? Will visa categories be added or taken away? I think anything's in play. My guess is the federal government doesn't even know, and it will be decided somewhat haphazardly and somewhat at the last minute if indeed any policy changes happen. That just seems to be, that's not insight on my part, but it just seems par for the course with a lot of these policies. They seem to be somewhat haphazard.
Okay, well, thank you. So Harry, hopefully that gives you a little bit of insight. I think we're all kind of watching along together to figure out what's going to end up happening, but hopefully we will see some good news there. So I see we have lots and lots of questions. So I'm trying to pick some questions that are general for everybody. So we have a question from Alex. Alex is saying, can I change employers after arriving, or am I required to stay with the agency that sponsored me? This is an interesting one. This is a good one. Mike, do you want to go ahead and take this one? And then I actually have also 2 cents to add in there.
Sure. I think there's a couple things to keep in mind here. First, you've got some immigration rules, and then you've got some likely contractual and employment law rules. So speaking on the immigration rules, when you are immigrating to the U.S. and you're going to the consulate interview, you are saying that I intend to work for whatever company is sponsoring you, Hospital A. When you then come into the U.S. and make an entry into the U.S., you are legally at that time also making a representation that I intend to work for Hospital A. There is no set time limit set with that, but I would think that if you change your job quickly, that there is the possibility that the USCIS at some point later could determine that you fraudulently entered the U.S., that you did not intend to work for Hospital A as you promised, but you had already intended to change and move Hospital B or C or some other occupation or whatever, therefore making your entry fraudulent, therefore being able to rescind your green card. So I think that is problematic. There is no rule that is written that says a certain amount of time. By analogy, in the I-45 context, we have a situation where if you've been in the 485 process, which is the process individuals who are here in the U.S. use, where you can be what's called portable after 6 months. They call it the AC-21 rule. That allows you to change. So a lot of attorneys will take that, even though it's not directly applicable to somebody coming in from overseas, and say, well, it's similar. It's the closest we have to analogy, and say that after 6 months of working at Hospital A, like you promised when you came in, that you are, from an immigration perspective, you fulfilled your promise. Now, if you come in and something completely changes, for example, Hospital A was going to employ you and Hospital A says, well, we no longer have a job for you. Well, then that's a different situation and you'll fulfill your obligation. So you've got some immigration rules and you also have contractual rules. You've likely signed a contract with either the agency or the hospital or both. So you're going to have to look at those. Different states have different employment law rules as to what can be applied to you and what cannot. And then I think just from a general kind of good character perspective, even though these days at our highest levels, good character seems to be fairly irrelevant, but you're making a promise to come and work. Companies investing a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort in bringing you here. And for you to quickly jump ship, frankly, from my seat, reflects on your character. So maybe you can run for office.
I think you said a word in the beginning, Mike. You said commitment, that I think is a really important word to answer this question. You're making a commitment to the agency or the healthcare system, just like they are making a commitment to you. You know, if you've been watching for a long time, my mom used to say it's like a marriage. You're in it for the long haul. You're in it for the commitment. So, of course, every case is specific and you may have your own facts, but I do think it is important to remember the commitments that you made and the commitments that the healthcare system made to you. So those are definitely important factors to keep in mind. Thank you for sharing, Mike. Okay, Chris, we're going to turn to you. We have a question from Justice. Justice says, my question is, my I-140 is in the 20th month now, still processing. What's the way forward now? It's depressing. So does it matter that Justice's I-140 is still processing? Can you give us a little bit of insight?
Right. So your priority date is established the date you file your I-140, but if the I-140 is not approved, then your priority date has no effect value. So 20 months is a long time. They are taking over a year. 20 months last I looked, and it has been a few weeks, but that is at the certainly at the upper bound. So number one, without a doubt, you need to contact your attorney and find out what is going on with your case. If you have something like an RFE, then I think 20 months is within the realm of possibility. So number one, contact your attorney and or two, your recruiter slash employer to see what the situation is with your case. You always have an option to upgrade to premium process. Now, if yours is at 20 months, that would make your priority date is something like January 1st, 2024, which I think is possible if you're in the all other category to be current by this time next year. So you are not There is no reason to upgrade your case premium processing, because I think even optimistically, you would not likely be current for until sometime in 2026, maybe even into 2027. But, and I'm talking calendar year there, by the way, but the reality is 20 months is at the upper bound. So you do need to talk to somebody. And the only real reason to use premium processing for you, I would think, is if you're just lying awake every night for 20 months wondering what's going on with your case, and that you would feel comfortable with that approval notice in hand. But candidly, if you're at 20 months, your case is probably going to be adjudicated this summer, because that's just the timelines. But you do want to contact somebody and see what the situation is with your case.
Okay, so what I think I'm hearing you say, Chris, is that although it doesn't necessarily matter to have premium processing or not, because your priority date is established when you file, if you have been waiting for a long time, i.e. 20 months, it may be worth checking in with your attorney. Sound about right?
That's right. Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. So Mike, as a follow-up question, Winnie wants to know, how does premium processing help, if any, with this kind of retrogression, and are you suggesting to your clients to use it? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so as Chris mentioned, you get a priority date when your I-140 is filed. If you are an allied and you've gone through the perm process, you get your priority date when your perm is filed. With one of the things we look at is, am I going to be allowed to go to the next stage if I'm approved or not? And if you're in the U.S., you know, there's no reason to premium process, because you can file even a 485 if your status is current. If you're overseas and your priority date is current or close to current, then premium processing may be, you know, something to actually do. Right now, my advice generally is, if you have an old priority date that you are recapturing and you're going to be current, or you're projecting to be current, say in the next 6 months, then I would premium process. Otherwise, I would not.
Okay. Makes sense. So if you have a priority date that may become current, that's where premium processing may be helpful. Otherwise, at least for right now, if you're filing a new I-140, probably not going to be worth spending that, what, $2,805? It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. So some good info for everybody who's wondering about premium processing and I-140 filings and priority date and how that kind of works together. So Chris, I'm going to turn to you for this next question. So Savella, I'm going to paraphrase the question. So unfortunately, Savella's job offer was rescinded from her facility. So I'm really sorry, Savella. That sucks. Hopefully that just means when one door closes, another one that is going to open is going to be better. But essentially what she wants to know is it possible to recapture the priority date, or is it more a case-by-case basis?
So the first thing she needs to know, and I'm not sure we know from the question, Danielle, is, was the I-140 actually approved? If it was approved, it is very possible to recapture the priority date. So she just needs to contact her attorney, get them a copy of that I-140 approval notice from Company A, who just released her. I know at our firm, we do like to see some sort of email from the other employer confirming that they have released you. We never want to get in a situation where you have two cases at the same time. That's not good for anybody. But so get the old I-140 approval from the old company, get the new company to sponsor your case. Make sure that attorney has experience recapturing priority dates, which is not very difficult, frankly, but you want to make sure they know how to do that. And then also just have the confirmation, and it'll be for your protection as much as anybody's protection, some sort of email confirmation that the Company A is no longer pursuing your case. And it's not the most straightforward case, but it happens routinely enough that most attorneys should be able to guide you through that.
Interesting. So I didn't know that. So I just want to clarify. You have to have an I-140 approval and not just a pending I-140, Chris?
Right. That's right.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Good to know. Okay. Well, hopefully that's some good information for you there, Savella. And hopefully you can get that priority date recaptured, find a new good placement, and come to the U.S. Our fingers are crossed for you and wishing you all the best. So I see we have a question from Winnis. I'm going to take this question. Winnis is asking, do you recruit new grads? So I think that's a really good question, Winnis. And I think it's kind of a broader question on how to really make your application stand out. So right now, it's a very competitive landscape. There are lots of NCLEX passers. And I think the question is really, how do I make myself stand out to agencies? How do I make myself stand out to healthcare systems? So we're going to bring up a graphic with some key points that I think will help you understand and give you some good guidance on how to, you know, really make your application stand out. So number one is going to be passing that NCLEX. So that is key. So that is the first thing you want to do. That's what you want to do before you submit an application. That's your golden ticket. Number two, you want to consider your specialty. Is your specialty something that that agency or that health system is looking for? Is it broad? Something maybe that can translate over to something else? These are all questions you could be thinking about. The next most important thing is going to be your current work experience in an acute care setting. So if you're a new grad, this is something you really want to get under your belt because this is how you're going to make your application stand out. Most employers and agencies want to see current work experience. This is really key. Type of qualification and degree. Of course, the higher degree that you have, the more your application will stand out. Years of experience. This is also quite an important factor. Also something that you can get while you are waiting for your processing. So something to keep in mind. And then the last one, I really want to underscore this, is your English language experience and English language pass. So while you are waiting, while you are in the immigration line, or while you are waiting to have your application reviewed, this is a key item. Take your English, pass your English, just get it out of the way. This is another way that you could make yourself stand out. So hopefully that's some good info for you there, Winnis. Okay, so let's see. We got lots of questions. We are going to take another question from Kim. So Kim says, if I start on an H-1B, can I later transition to an EB-3 without leaving the U.S.? So I think this is kind of just a broad question about H-1Bs and EB-3s and how they work together. So Mike, I think you're up next. Can you give our audience just a little information on what an H-1B is and if you can end up transitioning to an EB-3? Is that possible?
Sure. Okay. So H-1Bs are work visas here in the U.S. It's one of the most common work visas. They are routinely used for all types of allied professions, med techs, pharmacists, et cetera, OTs, PTs. They're rarely used for RNs, but there are a few. The question is, can I convert it to an EB-3? And the answer is yes. The process is different depending on your occupation. So if you're an allied, you're going to go through something called PERM. If you're a nurse, you're going to go through a process. You're going to start with the I-140. One of the things to keep in mind, the hospital that's working for you has a large offshore program where they bring international RNs in through the Schedule A process. They're likely going to have a PWD, a prevailing wage determination, indicates an associate's is the standard, which is inconsistent with your position. Your position, you're likely in ER or ICU, some other specialty unit, which helped you qualify for the H-1B. So you're likely going to need a new prevailing wage determination for that specific specialty, and that states a BSN is the standard. And then you're able to file as an H-1A. Yes, you can do it without leaving the U.S. You can go through what's called adjustment of status. And that kind of takes the place of the National Visa Center and the consular interview. So yes, it can all be done completely from here in the U.S. The timelines are the same. So retrogression is still in effect. You don't get an advantage because you're on an H-1. You're simply here already working. So there's the advantage in that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mike. So that's some good information on kind of how it will work with an H-1B and transitioning to an EB-3. I do want to just add in that an H-1B, not only do you need to qualify, but so does the healthcare system, which is why there are lesser available positions for an H-1B, but it is still a faster option in certain circumstances if that's something that you qualify for and the healthcare system qualifies for. So thank you for that info, Mike. So, Chris, I see a question from Bernu, who is saying been current and haven't received anything, quite anxious. So I can certainly understand how Bernu might be feeling a little bit concerned. Can you kind of walk us through what it looks like when you become current, assuming, you know, your priority day is current and your document, what are the next steps?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, typically what happens is if you're current, you want to get document early qualified. Sometimes you can get document early qualified before you're current. I assume by current, he means on chart A and not chart B. Different embassies move at very slow or fast paces. So that could be part of your cause. But as to why specifically your case is not been scheduled for a visa, you know, if you've only been current for a month or so, I probably wouldn't be concerned. I would, of course, I'm sure you'll wish that that wasn't the case. My guess is what's probably happening, assuming your documents are early qualified, is that your particular embassy is just moving slowly, which is not uncommon over the summertime. So, you know, definitely check with your attorney. Have them see if they can see what's going on at your particular embassy.
Okay, so sounds like different embassies will have different processing times, but your next step, assuming everything is done and ready, is to go to the embassy for your interview. Nope. All right. Okay, so Mike, we have a follow-up question from Bernu. Bernu was asking, what happens if one of the dependents are about to age out? Can you give us some insight there? And can you explain what that means, age out?
Sure. So first of all, Bernu, for your question, you're going to want to get some communication with your attorney or your account manager to make sure that you're dealing with your particular circumstances. But generally speaking, age out occurs. All dependents have to be under 21. When the visa is actually issued. So when they go to the interview and you get approved and you get a stamp, that's when they need to be under 21. There is a rule that says they don't set the date of 21 when you turn 21 by your birthday. There's a rule called the Child Status Protection Act. It's been around for, I don't know, 20, 25 years. And what they do is they take and they add on the days your I-140 was pending. So your I-140 was pending for, say, 8 months. Then your child doesn't turn 21 on their 21st birthday. They turn 21 on their 21st birthday plus 8 months. So that's one factor. There are also some other scenarios where the time could stop. Does not stop time is retrogression. So if you have a child, if you were only filed in, say, 2025, you have a child that's 20 right now. In my opinion, there's no chance that the child is going to be able to immigrate with you. And you need to talk to your attorney about what's the plan. Is your child going to go to school? Your child may come here early and become a student on F1. There's a variety of things that you could look at. But aging out is a very big concern, particularly as we are in retrogression that is now, you know, by most accounts in the 2.5-3 year mark. So if you've got a child that's over, frankly, the age of like 16, 17, I would at least alert as to what's going on. That would also play a factor in whether you want to ever upgrade your case to premium, your I-140, because you can buy more time for your child if you don't upgrade to premium. So a variety of factors there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Thank you for sharing, Mike. So Bernu, I'm sure this is a very real concern depending on how old your child is. But sounds like you want to game plan early. So talk to your immigration attorney and figure out what the path forward is for you and your family. But good question. Thank you, Bernu, for submitting. Okay, Chris, I see a question from Leonardo. Leonardo says, is there any chance that the dependents will not be counted as an EB3 visa allotment? I saw some videos circulating that some people are pushing it through Congress. Do you know what Leonardo was talking about?
I mean, there are, you know, in a year, there's literally thousands of bills in front of Congress. So I would absolutely not watch videos where they're talking about one particular bill that has just been introduced. So, for instance, there's this Dignity Act that had got a lot of buzz. We talked about it a little bit at last month's call. But as I suggested to you, I don't think that has much of a chance of going anywhere. I think candidly, almost any immigration bill has very little chance of moving. So I don't know the specific bill that they're talking about, but I would be extremely surprised, and I would put the chances of dependents being stripped out of the employment-based program at pretty close to zero.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess that's why you are coming here, Leonardo, and not to random videos on the internet. Can be disappointing, I'm sure. That would be very exciting, and who knows, but at least good to get the information from here. So, Mike, I'm going to turn to you. So Jehad says, can you please explain the new policy of CSPA? I'm guessing Jehad means the Child Status Protection Act or Protective Act. I could be mixing that up, but I think that's what maybe Jehad is talking about and how it will affect us. So will it affect anybody who's kind of overseas and, you know, watching this in any way?
Well, there's not a new Child Status Protection Act. It's been around a long time. And it does affect dependents by helping establish their date to a date beyond their birthday. We talked about just on the last question about the most common thing relates to how long an I-140 has been pending, and those get added. There's a lot of complexities to it, like two I-140s. Can you count both dates? What date you go with, the one you're being petitioned by or for the next one? So there's a variety of variables that will depend upon your specific case and your particular circumstances. So anytime you've got an age-out child situation, you're going to want to talk to the attorney handling your case of a specific plan for your situation to know when your child's age is locked in. It's not general answers that are applied to everyone, aside from the I-140 processing time, which is the easiest part of it.
All right. Thank you, Mike, for giving us some clarification there. So I see we're almost at time, so we're going to try to get to as many questions as we can. So, Chris, I see we have a question from Maureen. Maureen is saying, can you please help clarify this? My priority date is June 3rd, 2023, and the visa bulletin is at June 3rd, 2023. Am I current, or is the date counted from June 2nd, 2023? So I guess just broadly, when we look at the chart, how do we actually read the dates?
So I'm looking at the visa bulletin. Wait, check that. Let me get the visa bulletin in front of me. So yeah, the visa bulletin is May 1st, 2023. So I don't know where she's getting that.
Yeah. Generally, if we bring up, maybe let's bring up that graphic with the
same. Yeah, bring it up. It's February or April, sorry, depending on which.
All right. So yeah.
So the first thing, the most important thing you need to know is it's not June 2023, or at least not any of these common categories. Perhaps there's a family-based category you're on. I got to be honest, I don't know if it's the day of or the day before. You know, I would need to look that up. I don't know that off the top of my head. It's candidly, I'm not sure I've ever been asked that question. So unfortunately, I can't help with that.
I know we talked about it before on one of our shows, and I remember I got one or the other. Mike, do you know? Is it inclusive?
Well, I think it's you have to have not inclusive to have the date. That's what I think. But, you know, I've already been wrong 3 or 4 times today. It's early in the morning here. So not putting any money on my answer, but I do believe it is you have to have the day before. So right now we're at February 8th, 2023 for the Philippines EB3. I think you need to be February 7th.
Okay. I think you are right too. I remember talking about this a couple of years ago, even at this point. We've been doing this for a long time. And I remember thinking, oh, I learned something new. So now I need to go back because I've already forgotten. But I think you're right, Mike. So thank you. Okay. So we have got lots of questions. We got about 15 minutes left. So we will try to get to as many as we can. So let's see. We have a question from Cram. Cram is asking, can my employer file for PERM and I-140 simultaneously? I don't know if I'm even sure exactly what Cram is asking. Chris, I think you're up for this one.
Okay, so a couple of things, maybe a little background. And hopefully we will get to the answer to their question in one of these answers, because I agree, it's a little confusing. So can your employer file for permanent I-140 at the same time? So first thing, a typical employment-based immigration case has a perm stage, an I-140 stage, and then an interview stage. And that interview stage can either be consular processing or adjustment of status. And essentially the only distinction between those is consular processing means your interview is overseas. Adjustment of status means your interview is here in the United States. Okay. So you cannot move from one stage perm to the I-140 until the perm is certified. Okay. So in the usual course, you file your perm, then that gets certified, then they file your I-140, and then you're able to move on to the final stage, which is I-45 or consular process. Without getting too technical on that third stage, we can actually jump the gun a little bit on that using the dates of filing chart sometimes. We won't get into that because that's the point of this question. Now, if you have qualifications for two different roles, I would think theoretically, although probably not with the same employer, you could. So for instance, if you were a registered nurse, but you also were a medical technologist, I suspect Hospital A could file for your perm case as a medical technologist, and Hospital B could file for a Schedule A case for you as a registered nurse. But I think that's going to be very rare. So let's revert back to what I initially said, which is you have to complete the perm stage and then file your I-140 stage.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. So maybe this is a kind of specific question to somebody with a specific skill set and depending on what they're trying to do there. But there you go, Jacob. So at least there's some information for you. So, Mike, we have a question that somebody would like you to help clarify. So Trudian is asking, my immigration attorney told me that my daughter's age is locked in when we get DQ'd, but Mike is saying something different. Could you please clarify? So I think we're worried about aging out. Can you maybe take us back to that? You know, give
us the night. Aging out.
You're not locked in when you're documentarily qualified, if that was the question, Daniel.
Yeah.
So Mike is correct, and their immigration attorney was incorrect. I'm not saying their immigration attorney doesn't have this correct. I'm saying that the question, as it's framed, says that the immigration attorney is incorrect. But no, if you're documentarily qualified today, but you don't take your kid for your visa interview for 4 years, that does not mean that your child's age freezes.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying, Chris. All right. So hopefully that helps you, Trudian. And this is why it's very important to make sure that you are working with an attorney that really knows what they're doing and has filed many nursing cases if you are a nurse. So that is what these two experts definitely know. So thank you both. Okay, Mike, we'll turn to you. So Isaac is asking, can you please explain follow to join us? If my dependents use the follow to join us route, will they use my priority date? What is follow to join us?
Yeah, so follow to join is the concept by which your dependents are not going to go to the interview at the same time that you are and get a green card and come in at the same time. Now, let me clarify that just for a second. Follow to join is a very specific legal process. If you and your dependents all go to the visa interview and all get approved, and you fly in next week, and your dependents stay and finish out the summer and then fly in 3 months later, as a practical matter, they are following to join, but that's not the legal process. That's simply, we're flying in later. You get 6 months after you're approved to actually fly in. So that type of follow to join is not uncommon. And I would encourage people that if your family is going to come in within 6 months, that they go to the interview with you, and that will solve all the problems. But the specific legal process of follow to join is a situation where you go to your interview by yourself and they're going to follow to join and have an interview later. Each consulate does that a little differently. They do get to keep your priority date. We had several situations back in several years ago where priority dates were current or were fairly current, and then they retrogressed where families that were doing follow to join got stuck because they also have to be current at the time that they get their interview. So a follow to join is certainly a possible process, and it's different if you did an adjustment of status in the U.S. and then your family follows to join than if you are all at the consulate. So reach out to your attorney or account manager to discuss, first of all, is it really practical? Does this really make sense for you and your family? And what would it look like? What additional cost would you incur? How much longer will it take? All those kinds of things are relevant factors in following. But it is certainly possible and appropriate in some situations.
Okay. Thank you, Mike, for explaining follow to join. I always learn something new every time that we meet each month. So thank you for explaining. If you are watching along at home and you are starting to feel a little bit overwhelmed with all of the legal terms, which I completely understand because I've been doing this for many years and I still feel like I'm learning new things, I want to suggest to you to download our free guidebook. So we are going to drop a link in the chat. These are immigration guidebooks on all of the different ways that you could come to the U.S. and it walks through what that process may look like and gives you some information, gives you some definitions. You know, you can take your destiny into your own hands and knowledge is power. So please feel free to download our guidebooks. They're free. You can share them with your friends and educate yourself because this can be a confusing process. And we want to make sure that you have all of the information. Your attorneys are here to support. We are here to support as AMN International. We want to make sure that you feel comfortable and feel confident as you're moving through this process. And by doing, you know, by downloading those guidebooks, that's one way to do it. Okay, so I see that we are almost at time. I want to make sure that we take maybe one or two more questions. So let's see. We have a question. Let's see. So many questions. I'm trying to decide which is a good one to go for. All right. So let's see. Chris, we have a question from William. William is asking, hi, my I-140 was filed on December of 2023. It's been 19 months now, and it's still not approved. May I know what's causing this delay? So we kind of talked a little bit earlier in the show. Out those longer delays. What could be the reason for it getting longer and longer to get an I-140 approval?
Yeah, it's you know, I knew it's characterized as a delay, but to me a delay would be outside the normal bounds when unfortunately your case is actually taking within the normal bounds. We are seeing these I-140s take well in excess of a year. So yours is at 19 months or something, which in my mind is at the outer bound, but not so outlandish. In terms of what causes it, you know, that's just the U.S. government putting some things in priorities and other things is not a priority. And if you think about it, an I-140 for a consular process that's not current, that's just not a priority for the government. Why? Because whether your case gets approved in June, July, August, September, November of 2025, it all sort of doesn't matter because you're not current. That's what the government would tell you. They would also tell you, if you're that anxious to get it approved, they have a program for you to do that. It just costs you another $2,800. And as Mike said earlier, unless you really have a desire to have peace of mind, there's no really good legal reason for you to do that. So, but to answer the question, why is it so backlogged? I think it's just the U.S. government saying they're going to work on cases where people are current. They're going to work on temporary visas and they only have limited resources and they're just not going to work as expeditiously on cases where there would be no legal or very little legal significance to working on that case.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Some information for us there for some of us who may be waiting for an I-140 to be approved. So I think we could take one more question. So Mike, we'll give you the last one. So Finesse is asking, if a petition was filed as a change of status in the USA, but currently waiting for visa eligibility, can the person return to their home and go through the consulate once they've become visa eligible, or do they have to wait in the U.S.?
Whoa. So change of status normally refers to non-immigrant visas, things like H's, F's, B's, J's, et cetera. So it would generally not apply in the green card context. But let me just make some assumptions probably. Probably talking about I have an I-140 approved here in the U.S. I'm waiting for my process. And instead of finishing my process here in the U.S. through adjustment, I'm going to go overseas and consular process. And if that's the question, then the answer is yes, you can do that. However, you have to file something called an I-824 to move your case from the U.S. to the consulates. And I haven't looked in a while, but the last time I looked, that was taken about 12 to 14 months, and there was no premium processing option. That would have to be a consideration. But yes, it is possible. There are people who file an I-140 here in the U.S. and are not eligible for an adjustment of status in the U.S., either because of how they entered or maybe they worked without permission while they were in school or something like that, the most common ones we see. And so they're going to do consular processing, even though they're in the U.S. right now. So reach out to your attorney, reach out to your account rep, and they can give you some guidance on that. But it can be done, but it's likely going to take considerably longer.
Interesting. Okay, so those are important factors for somebody to really think about. But again, consult with your attorney, make the best decision for yourself. All right, so looks like we are about at time. Thank you, Chris and Mike, for joining me today and answering all of our questions. Very informative as always. And I think we are all excited, although I'm always excited to see you, Bo, but especially excited for next month. So thank you both for joining us, and we will see everybody next month for the October Visa Bulletin. So have a good one, and thank you both for joining us.
Thanks, Dan, Jeff. Bye.
All right. So thank you, everybody who submitted questions, who put comments in the chat. We appreciate you joining us. Hopefully you found this session helpful. Let's bring up our schedule for the rest of the month and looking into the next month. So our upcoming shows, which are always at the same time, 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we are going to be doing a client showcase with SSM Health on August 29th. So we are going to be having them come on and share what is special about their system as they begin hiring. We are also going to be doing our October Visa Bulletin debrief in September. At some point, we don't know. We're going to come to you as soon as we can, as soon as it comes out. We will be here the very next day to debrief and discuss what this means for you. So please join us for that October Visa Bulletin debrief, sometime to be determined in September. We also have our upcoming AMN Academy shows. So these are shows that are at 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time every Monday with our partners 9.09er and iPass. And we have a new show that's going to be on the fourth Monday of every month with Dee, our recruitment director, and she has a segment, Dream Jobs with Dee. So she's going to be going into a little bit more detail about the available jobs that we have for that month and sharing with you some insight and some information. So make sure to check that out. It's going to be a good one. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Great to see all the comments and the chats. I saw everybody's comments, and I see where you're coming from, and I'm very thankful that you're joining us. So thank you so much, and we will see you again next month for our October Visa Bulletin release. If you were inspired today and you would like to reach your American dream with AMN Healthcare, please feel free to apply on our website. That link is amnhealthcare.com/international, and our recruiters are on hand, ready, waiting, and excited to help you reach your American dream. I just want to remind everybody, you know, when I come off of these immigration debriefs, sometimes it's exciting, sometimes it's a little bit of an anxiety feeling. You may be feeling different ways depending on what information we discuss. But I just want to remind you, number one, retrogression just means a delay. It doesn't mean that you're not going to get here. So if you are sitting at home and you are feeling like, am I ever going to get to the United States? I'm here to tell you that you can. Take control of your situation, take control of your life, do the things that you need to do in order to reach your American dream. And it's just a delay. It means that you're going to get here. It just might take a little bit longer. And number two, control what you can control. We can't control the visa bulletin. We can't control the movement. but you can control how you are making your application stand out, how you are making yourself a better healthcare nurse, med tech, whatever you may be. So this is your time to do all of those things. So just wanted to leave you with that little bit of encouragement and advice. And I look forward to seeing everybody next month. Onwards and upwards, everybody. Bye-bye.
This is Nursing in America. Each week, we speak with incredible nurses from all over the world who have taken the leap to start a new life in the United States. If you're thinking about doing the same, then this is the place you'll find all the insider knowledge and inspirational success stories to realize your own American dream.